Hi, and welcome to this special podcast. At SIDGRAPH this year, Autodesk had a vision series that delved into AI and its kind of role in VFX production. Now, that vision series was a bunch of different panels, and I was invited to be on one of the panels. Our panel was looking at basically exploring the transformative power of AI in media and entertainment, and I was just one of several panelists joining me, or rather I was joining, I guess, Nikola Todorovic, who is the CEO and co-founder of Wonder Dynamics, along with Ty Sheridan. I was actually on a separate panel with Ty, and I posted that on FX Guide. But as you know, Wonder Dynamics has basically been doing amazing work in revolutionizing the concept of being able to very, very quickly visualize with state-of-the-art AI technology entire shots that would remove a person, have done motion capture from them just from a single mono camera, produce a character, light it, and composite it back into a scene. I was also on the panel with Jen Hollingsworth. She's from Flawless AI. She's the chief commercial officer. Actually, she had about 15 years at Lionsgate before becoming somebody that joined the Flawless AI team, which has been developing their TrueSync. And then Phil Barringer. So Phil is the head of operations at Rising Sun in Adelaide, here in Australia. And he had, I guess, 13 years, I guess, at Weta before moving over to Rising Sun. So knows a lot about the practical applications of AI. And the conversation was led by Rachel Appleton from Autodesk. So you'll hear Rachel asking us questions in a moment. The conversation was basically demystifying the language, I guess, and the controversies around AI and trying to address, I guess, some of the misconceptions we have about generative AI in particular. Anyway, the recording picks up actually after the initial introductions with me talking, as it happens, about my perception. I'd just been asked a question by Rachel to sort of kick off proceedings about how I think about AI and my perceptions of why I think it's important. And then you'll hear each of the other speakers are referred to by Rachel. I should just point out that this audio recording came from Autodesk, and we run it through a few AI filters, as it happens, to improve the quality of the audio. But it wasn't, of course, recorded as a podcast. It was recorded as a live event at SIDGRAPH. And so apologies if some of the audio isn't quite up to totally the standard we're kind of used to. But I think it's actually pretty good. And certainly I think the AI has done a great job in cleaning it up. Okay, so next time you hear me, it'll be live or other recorded from our event at SIDGRAPH in Los Angeles.
So there's a, it's not a, people in Clayton, it's been like a wild frontier or a gold rush, and that identifies an unruly, unordered sort of mass, you know, running with kind of chaos. It isn't that at all. It's more like we've just discovered a new area that has tremendous potential, and it has so much potential that it's quite possible that you can come across something that, you know, you'd think something would have done and they haven't, and yet adopt it and make enormous impact. So it really is a great time to be both a practitioner and a researcher.
Thank you, Mike. One other follow-up question for you, Mike. It's, perhaps it's obvious, but why do you think it's so important for us to have a discussion like this now?
I think one of the, okay, so I got a bit of a high voice of media on here. I have two things that bug me, right? Firstly, that people are characterizing AI as inherently evil. And trust me, I had that really hard. I mean, somebody at Cambridge University accused my research of being unethical, shouldn't be funded by any university, and equivalent of the Manhattan Project for democracy, and that I was going to be single-handedly helping to defeat entire Western civilization. Which, you know, you've got to give the guy points for kind of being an academic that's quite, you know, vivid in his analogies. But the thing is, like, it's society changes and society develops, and society isn't a constant. So if you bear that in mind for a second, and also think something is what we use it to be, yeah, like something isn't a box that I make, you know, like I often talk about like a mobile phone, right? If you're using a phone as a phone, it's a phone. If you're using it as something to watch a movie, and that's all you do, it's actually a TV. And if it doesn't work and you stick it in to open the door, it's a doorstop, right? It is what you use it to be. And so what we use this technology to be, we sort of co-define in our use of it what it actually is. Similarly, society is learning what those things are as we use it. Now, people said to me, well, you know, you can do anything now with AI. Like, we do a lot of work with facial reenactment and changing for language, as you do. And so the thing about that, right, is people say, oh, you can make anyone say anything now, so you can never believe anything ever again, which is the Cambridge guy's attitude. But my point is, I could make a picture up right now of something in Photoshop, and it could look 100% real. And we've had that for like a number of years, and it hasn't been the death of democracy, because society learned that you could do stuff in Photoshop. And so they said, oh, if there's a picture of Mike at a Ku Klux Klan rally, I know Mike, he's not a Nazi fascist prick. He's, you know, so that's obviously Photoshop, right? Like, you don't have to go and do digital forensics to determine that I'm not a neo-Nazi. Like, I'm just a normal guy, and I'm obviously not a Nazi. And so, you know, somebody does that, it's wrong. But it's also covered already under the law. You can't take your likeness. I wish that we were in a society that understood that I can't do this, but I can't take your license and promote a product. If I was a Pepsi, I can't sort of put you in an ad for Pepsi right now. Forget AI, I just can't do that, right? So we have some legal constraints already. We have some things that need to be improved, but society is on a journey right now. So I was so pleased to be working on this panel. Because having an informed public is the number one thing we really need to do right now for a sensible discussion. And Rachel, if you'll just indulge in one other bit of my high horse, so I didn't expect to get into this so quickly. The other thing that we were just discussing earlier, and I think is true, and I know you guys agree with me on the panel, it is so offensive and so rude to characterize the work of the hardworking people that are producing this stuff at the studios and in things as somehow being either nerdy geeks that, like, whatever, off to the side that don't have any understanding what's going on, or, more to the point, just irrelevant because it's one button press and AI does it. I mean, the sheer talent of the people that are doing this work as TDs and as creative people, and to minimize their contribution to filmmaking, it's just absurd. Like, the filmmakers that I know, and by that I mean people that are technical in VFX, are some of the most highly tuned filmmakers out there. They understand lensing, they understand lighting, they understand makeup, they understand editing, they understand composition, they understand human expression so as to get subtext in a script. Now, if that isn't filmmaking, I don't know what is. And one of the good reasons for that is that our colleagues in VFX, you, work in all those other departments, right? There's no other department in filmmaking that contributes to hair and makeups, you know, script, editing, like composition, lighting, you know, all of those things. So to characterize these people as not being true to filmmaking is just downright insulting both to their technical competency and their creative competency. And so that's why I just think it's so important that we don't allow the conversation to minimize their role by pretending that AI is doing it all and that it's just some kind of evil force that we don't understand. Yeah, that's me.
You know, it's tense. I'd like to skip over to Jen. Flawless is very uniquely positioned as a production company and as a SaaS provider. So can you tell us a little bit about how you guys are scaling the ability to maximize value and delivery?
Sure. So I think first, as we back up a little bit, we are a company, we're founded by filmmakers, and we have a lot of people in leadership that have touched the filmmaking process. And even across functions, of people are generally creative in whatever they're doing. So I think when you're a creative person, especially if you've touched filmmaking, you recognize that there is a process in place that has been in place for a long time. So in comes this AI term and potentially tools that people don't quite understand. There's a natural resistance to do anything until they fully understand exactly what things are, and that takes a long time, and people don't necessarily like to lean into that as much, and because we'll just keep doing things that we've been doing on, which we all recognize that filmmaking is very hard. It's a hard process, an expensive process, a timely process. And so I think we come at it from, what challenges do we think that people will experience to adopting what we're doing? Because we really believe that we are going to transform filmmaking. So for us, it was, how do we make this approachable for people? So really, we're starting as a service company so that we can get the filmmakers across studios, production companies, ad agencies, just across, like, all kinds of film, we can get them into the process. We also want to prove to people how good it is of our the end result. So we're making sure that we're building this the right way. We are building toward building a software solution, but we want to do it as a service first to get people comfortable. We are making sure all the security is in place that people are used to, that they need. We're making sure that we fit into workflows. We have to fit into budgets. We have to fit into timelines, because we don't want to disrupt a process that has been in existence for so long that prevents adoption. So for us, if we is approaching it that way, we think that service based on a project level, even if it's just one, leads to like, oh gosh, this is much easier than I thought. The output is amazing, and it can really build a partnership so that when we do release that SaaS tool into as plugins to what people are already working on next year, then it'll be like, oh, I know what this is, I know how it works, and I'm really comfortable with the process. So it's just really creating like an easy entry point for people to then scale that to scale with us, so we can be part of their process to making films really great.
Awesome. Thanks, Chen. I'm gonna skip over to Phil. So I'd like to talk a little bit about RSV making the very strategic decision a few years back to invest in an AI and ML-driven pipeline by partnering with the Australian Institute of Machine Learning. And what advancements has that brought to your pipeline?
So just a bit of background on Rising Sun. Been around making films in Australia for 25 years doing visual effects. And it was about 5 or 6 years ago where they had a strategic alliance with the Australian Institute of Machine Learning. And they had a project, fortuitously, and that's the great thing about visual effects. You get these problems that come to you from outside, and it's a great place to solve, to create new technology, because you've got problems, you've got real things that you need to actually solve. And so they had a real need, and that's where universities often struggle a little bit, because it's a little bit, we need a problem to solve. So they love working with visual effects companies because we bring problems. So I think it was Elvis at the time was the problem. How do you make this film that needs this new actor that we need to retrofit onto some of the old footage? And that was in the early days of deepfake. And so they had a strategic alliance, worked with a couple of PhD students who ended up migrating over into the business and becoming a hub of machine learning within Rising Sun. And slowly we've grown a little machine learning department around that. There's sort of borderline production and technology generation at the same time. So I would call that's our prototyping of how you put, or how does machine learning fit within the production workflows. And then over time we've gone, well, we don't really want to just grow a bigger machine learning department and slowly push out all of the artists in all of these realms that we've got. And also the machine learning department is lacking the 20 years of experience of developing the eye and the problem solving for filmmaking that our artists have. So for us, the journey over the last 5 years has been how do you take that technology and actually infuse it through the artists? How do you, rather than, sometimes we talk about a displacement of jobs, and we think of it more as what are the new opportunities? How do we get this technology into the hands of the artists so that they can actually determine how their jobs are going to change, rather than them just seeing something growing beside them? And it's a challenge in visual effects, because if you've ever tried to train anyone in visual effects, it's very difficult to get them to make the time to come to train, because they're too busy doing the work. So for us, we have another relationship through, RSB's got a long history with the Adelaide University, and they actually run some bachelor degrees inside the visual effects business. And that's a great training ground. So that's another great place where we can start to actually influence what it is that they're learning in the university, so that the people that are coming into the business are infused with that knowledge already. And then that just naturally spreads from there. And then the machine learning team is constantly and tightly integrated with the artists. So the artists know these are the people you talk to, you bring your problems to them, and they're trying things. To Mike's point, we've never thought of that before, but maybe we could try it. That's happening inside the business all of the time. Where's a fit? And really, for us, that ends up being a lot of little vertical sort of solutions. We often talk about, as you were saying, Mike, this myth that AI is somehow, you push away a box button and outcomes perfect visual effects or pictures or whatever it is. And that's just not our experience. Our experience is it's best where you find little narrow use cases and we apply it to there. So that's broadly speaking our journey. It's still a very active journey. There's still a lot of people in Rising Sun who haven't used a tool that is AI that yet, but we create the mechanisms within the business for them to be able to access that information. And that's just simple things like communication channels. Like there's a Teams channel for ML and for talking directly to the team. The machine learning team sits next to the compositors because that's where the face swap sort of stuff started from. And the knowledge is just slowly spewing out from there. And I'd say also an important thing, some of the reasons some of those things exist is because the executive leadership of the business in the first place is on board and is selling it and is actively thinking about how do we actually bring this business all along on this journey. So we don't have the sitting back and waiting to see what happens and it's just bubbling up in a corner over here because some technologist in the business knew how to do it and it's growing from within the effects department. It's very much a conscious sort of top-down, bottom-up approach all at the same time. I think that really helps and that'll help us not be left behind and be able to just continually adapt the business and evolve it and leverage the technology and the opportunities that it provides.
Thanks, Phil. Speaking of face swapping, body swapping, I'm going to skip over to Nicola. So I'm curious, Nicola, I know Wonder Dynamics promises to automatically animate, like compose CG characters into a live action scene. It's very exciting. Can you tell us a little bit about why you founded Wonder Dynamics?
Yeah, absolutely. For us, it really, what Mike said, I think I was a visual effects artist first, and I got into visual effects because I wanted to tell stories, so I wanted to be a filmmaker. And, I think the beauty of VFX is I was 12 years old, didn't really have a camera, but I had internet connection, so I was able to watch tutorials, right? Andrew Kramer and Mike and FX PhD, so that really what got me to learn about filmmaking. So we started Blend Dynamics, me and my co-founder, Ty Sheridan, he's an actor and producer. We start writing movies together. And then we're sci-fi geeks, so every time we wrote something, we realized, okay, that's another $50 million budget, so there's no way we'd get that ever. So we really stumbled upon AI early days, about 2018. We were doing more of an interactive product, more of a conversational kind of cognitive AI. And we called it a visual AI at the time, what we were doing with the scene generation. And that's when we decided completely to focus. First we wanted to build the tools for ourselves selfishly because we wanted to tell the movies we were writing, but then we realized, okay, this is bigger than us, let's turn it into a platform. And really, we launched Wonder Studio recently in the last couple of months, but really the mission of the company has always been, how do we get indie filmmakers to do what studios traditionally can only do? So films with CG, films with heavy visual effects. I worked a lot on indie films and I was so frustrated how, due to budget constraints, you couldn't really achieve your vision. Your indie producers will always say, nope, we can't afford that, can't do this, we can't do that, right? So I think for us, it was always motivation behind it was, let's build a tool to speed up the existing process. And I think, to add to what Mike was saying, it's not a one-click solution. For us, it's you'll get your first pass out of the AI, but really it's all about the data that you get, your passes, your gameplays, your animation pass, etc. So for us, it was really important to work with artists and realize, hey, you tell us what you need to get your final effects out. Because AI is just the visual effects and filmmaking is just too hard to predict everything you want, right? And there's collaboration. And so it's too complicated to do it like that. So for us, we really were conscious on I always say, if you want to destruct something, don't destroy it. Build it with existing workflows because, again, I like to quote Mike because it's definitely one of my childhood dreams to be on the stage with Mike because I'm such a big fan. for me, it's at the end of the day, the artists and filmmakers are the ones that will be using these tools. So we got to build it inside of the industry with the feedback together with the artist to see what they need. And for me, that dream is, how do you get some kids around the world to be creating stories? to be full meta, our films that we wrote were about robots and what happens when we coexist with robots in the future. And then, of course, we ended up building an AI company to tell those stories. So for us, really, the technology is just a means to an end. We have a tech side of the company, we own the studio, but we also have a studio that we're starting where we're starting to develop that content and tell the story. So we're just a bunch of dreamers that you know, want to tell stories that is too expensive to make today.
Thanks, Nicolas. And to expand on that, can you talk a little bit about the recent production you worked on, the Joe Russo production?
Yeah, we worked with Russo. So Joe is on our board, and obviously Russo Brothers have been really leading the VFX space for a while now. We worked on this movie called Electric State, and that really helped us. You know, just like what Jen was saying, we brought in a lot of artists. We had obviously our internal artists and our talented people. Some of them right here, Deanna Max and Nisha. And we brought in the artists and we said, you tell us, don't worry about AI at all. Because a lot of people were worried AI is a black box. So we said, don't worry about AI at all. You know, just let's work on what your pipeline is. What do you use? You use Maya, you use Nuke, etc. What do you need from us to get you data? Because we analyze footage and then we have about 25 machine learning models that will extract everything from your body animation, facial animation, your light estimation, even what frame it is, camera tracking, etc. So because of AI, we were able to get in all those data. So they were able to start their 3D scene really, really, really fast. So that really helped us. We did that before we launched Wonder Studio. And that really helped us understand the process and what are the pain points. And obviously for us, working with the Russos, we don't do many of these projects a year. And we usually do it to learn at the highest level. So for us, that was more like, we learn how the Russos direct. We learn what their VFX editor is. We learn what is his life working with a big vendor. The VFX supervisor, Matt, he was a VFX supervisor at Ready Player One. So, you know, listening to him, learning from him really helped us to tailor the product. So it can be really tailored to the artist.
Thank you. I feel compelled now to ask Phil, like, the kinds of considerations you take, whether when you're deciding whether or not to develop these tools in-house or potentially leverage something off the shelf like Wonder Studio.
Yeah, so that's a funny thing. Having worked many years at Weta and now RSP, I feel like there's a bias in the Southern Hemisphere to build your own. I used to think Weta was a little bit like the Galapagos Islands of visual effects because it's so far away and it's pulled all this knowledge in and you just get crazy different solutions as a result of it. I feel like RSB has a little bit of a bias that way as well and probably, well, definitely was ahead of the curve. So that's a little bit that the things didn't exist at the point in time they're making the decision. But so a lot of, at the moment, if projects come into us through bidding and we're exploring some new future workflow, we'll cast a really wide net to see what's out there, but we do have PhD students who are predisposed to build a thing. They'll certainly look for models and what's available, and that's one of the biggest challenges at the moment is just the staying on top of the sheer quantity as seeing here at SIGGRAPH of what's out there. It's very difficult to actually collate that and actually feel like and different solutions can be applied to quite different problems than what they were designed for in the first place. But it's interesting with Nicolas, like, on the one hand, Wonder Studio Presents is a little bit of a black box. You just put this in and a character comes out over a plate. But if you use it, the interesting thing is that at every step, it'll give you that, it's built for visual effects because I can imagine how the conversations went. They went, oh, that's great, but his hand's doing this. So that plate with the hand doing that, that's not what I wanted. When his hand goes out and it comes back into frame and it wigs out, we can't do that for our clients. We don't. That's not going to fly. So can you give me the animation? Can you give me the camera track? Can you give me in visual effects, you always want flexibility and you want control right to the very end because the nature of approvals is not within your control.
We gave Phil free license to say this, but
yeah. that is not true. But I'm gladly
that was a big conversation. I had to spend a lot of time once we launched communicating that with people because a lot of people that are not in the FX industry, they don't understand the back process. I was very excited when Mike did a little write-up on the solution because he understood it right away. He understood what's happening in the background. A lot of people focus on the first pass, the video you get, because it's all about that stable diffusion. Oh, look, one-click process, you get your final VFX. Absolutely impossible. So for us, I had to spend a lot of time communicating That's the first pass. Don't worry about it. But it's hard because people that are not in the VFX space, you know, you're TikTokers, all they care about is that. They don't even know what a clean plate or Blender scene is or all that. So,
yeah, if I could weigh in on this, I think it's a really interesting point. If we could just use you as an example for a second, because like
just me,
well, the company, yeah,
I'll
So if people have said in the past, oh, you should really like get involved in this stuff, and then I've heard people say, oh, it'd be really important to learn about machine learning. And then somebody else will say, yeah, all you need to do is, you know, get PyTorch and like load it up and then, you know, go to Hugging Face and down. And then you can see their eyes kind of glassing over as they're like, I'm not going to be able to do any of this stuff. This is just bizarre, right? And so what I found really great about when I was first playing with Wonder Studios is, if you think about it, it's such an enabler to get over the hump of getting in. Because what you want for somebody, no matter whether a VFX artist that's working at Rising Sun, but it's a bit nervous because they know what this machine learning thing is, or somebody who's a filmmaker that wants to get into it, right, is like, how do I get into this thing? And so the fact that you can get something right out of the gate is rewarding, right? And you actually need that, because you actually need to show your partner or your mate, hey, look what I just did, right? And feel good that I actually got something, right? Now, the second that you do that, you then see, I want to take it further. And so then you can unpack it because you guys provide all the bits to unpack it, right? Now, it may be that I decide to go down background replacement, right, clean plate stuff, or it may be that I go into Maya and I start doing really cool things there because I've had that sort of initial positive reaction and I've started doing stuff. And before you know it, I'm in Maya, and thankfully, from what you announced here, I can like make my model in Maya and then take it in, right, to Wonder Studios. And so now I'm starting to do things and I've got in, right? I've got over the sort of hurdle of it just seeming too hard to even work out where to start. And I think that's a really terrific aspect because like it is the case that what you'll need to end up with is, you know, at that sort of an advanced level, the stuff that Phil's talking about, right? Where you need to really understand curating the training data so as to produce exceptionally high quality stuff. But nobody jumps straight to that. Nobody's there making synthetic data right out of the gate because they're like, synthetic data, what? You lost me at, you know, training day. But if you've got good ways of getting in, that helps everybody, right? Because if I am the TikTok person, I've had a positive experience with AI. If I'm me and I want to get in there and look at how you're playing with the algorithms, then I've had a good way of like having something to work on, you know what I mean? And if you are somebody that's just on the sidelines, and I'm particularly focused now on producers, because I think producers are the unsung heroes in VFX, because they're meant to know what's going on and they don't get anywhere near the attention that anybody else gets. But they're trying to understand how this is done and how to cost it and how to budget it and which staff would be best to go on stuff. And so they can kind of like, you know, tinker enough to learn the process. And when that happens, we're hitting at all the levels. And then, yeah, I'm going to want to use Maya because obviously I'm going to want to do high-end character work and obviously I'm going to want to do sort of super professional stuff. But if I have to like spend a year before I get my first picture out that I can show my wife and say, hey, check this out, man, this is so cool, then I'm probably not going to make it through the year. But if I could do that on day one and then start the journey, I mean, that is exactly what we want, right? Which is why I'm like a huge fan of what you're doing. I mean, our companies and the stuff that we're doing is like quite complicated. Like we're doing facial reenactment and converting entire feature films. But like I see it on the face of the artists that we hire, because we got like a tiny bullet ton, right? And they're not necessarily coming in as ML experts because there aren't that many out there. But they kind of want to know about it. But if you come into one of our companies, sure, we can put you in an intensive training program and you know, you're being employed to do all that, blah, blah, blah. But like what we want is the rest of the industry to feel comfortable and get in because it is really cool. But we really need, I'm sure you're totally aware of this, but we desperately need more staff. We can't be unquite at our table. So, but that needs, people need to feel comfortable with it and just excited by it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most exciting things about SIGGRAPH this year is how many of the DCCs are implementing it in some way that allows artists to get really close to it and start interacting with it live and building an intuition. And slowly that will spread to building that intuition for what data goes in. Like, one of the nice things about doing AI and visual effects is that we can really, really heavily bias the data towards the output that we want because it's a somewhat known thing that we want. We don't have to be quite as generalist as you guys do, so that but that requires a different skill on the artist's side. Now they need to understand how do I augment this input data to achieve this result that I want? And so anything that can shorten that loop so that they can experiment with those things is hugely valuable. And that's for us, for the education of the artists and getting them up to the speed where it's... Sorry,
I was going to say, like, I bet you if you polled the room right now, like, who got into this industry because it was fun, right? Like, nobody got into this industry because it was like, you know, being an actuary or being like an accountant, right? And so if you can't be excited by the stuff because it's there's a wall of, you know, complexity that stops you getting in, then that's not fun. So yeah.
Exactly. I think that's the point that we were trying to get. That's why we built a really simple interface. Because I think I get asked the question a lot, and like, what's the, you know, obviously your investors will always ask you, like, what's the target market? I say, you're missing the picture. The whole point of AI is the expansion of it. Now we're enabling people that were, you know, that had a hard time getting in it because it took years to learn how to do compositing, right? I was a compositor and then I went in CG and it was such a scary transition, right? I'm still transitioning in a sense of like, it's hard. It's really hard to learn. So that's the beauty for me of AI. It's like, let's make it easy. And then they just started, we were working with one of the studios. We asked them, what is it about AI that excites you? And they say, show, don't tell. Because a lot of producers, they have such a hard time and directors communicating exactly the vision they want and communicating the notes. So if you can easily just show what you want, that helps and saves so much time. At the end of the day, if you want to bring the price down of these movies we make, you have to cut down the time.
Can we also scan a little bit more just on the implications for actual roles within the industry, whether that's keep it open, but whether that's sort of voice actors or core creatives in post-production? Jen, you mind if we start with you?
Yes, so for us, I mean, we are using the normal localization process, so the voice actors are a critical part of what we're doing. It also fits, again, within the same process of how films have been made for so long, so it makes it easier for people. Also, the synthetic audio, I would argue, is probably not ready for the big screen, and I don't know that people are ready for it. And so we are not, we're not going down that road for us. We want to use the voice actors. So. We believe, and as Mike said it earlier, we believe these tools will just allow people to be more creative, the creators to be more creative. And I think that's what all the creators want. And kind of is funny because it's piggybacking off of what was being said up here is about making things on a budget and making things better. And I sat in greenlight meetings for 15 years, and we would greenlight a movie and be so excited. Like, oh my God, the vision of this movie is the best script you've ever read. It's so amazing. We have all these great ideas. And never once did I hear at the end of the process, this movie turned out exactly like we thought, or this movie is better than we thought. It is always that it's not as good. And it's all because of all of the constraints, the time, the just getting things coordinated, the money, like, oh, I didn't get the shot I want, like all the things that hopefully AI is going to help with to create that value at the end of the day. So it's it's really a great thing we're all doing.
Totally. Something I heard Nicholas say in a panel, I think, was that AI is going to help us close the gap between what we can imagine and what we can create. And that just really came through with what Nick's saying.
Yeah, from a writing standpoint, you're always thinking, okay, this seems perfect. It really adds the value. It moves the story forward. But then you start breaking it down and you're like, okay, there's no way I can afford that. So I think we always stop ourselves when we write. That's the first stage, right? You write something and you're hoping you can make that. And there's so much pullback always that we have to do. That's, if you ask me, long-term vision of AI, I think it's really going to bring us closer to whatever we can imagine that we can create.
We talk about bringing the bottom line down, creating more content, but I have to ask the question, are we going to need more people in the future? Are we going to need less people in the future?
I'd love to part way on this, right? Because I found this to be the oddest conversation. So the societal kind of pop culture thing is that everybody's going to get replaced by computers. And there's just no historical basis for this, right? Like, if you look at when creatives first started using computers, you could notionally say when the Apple Mac came out, like, it was no longer a sort of a programming thing, right? It was like a visual thing with a mouse. But that was like 1984, yeah? So we had it run through editing, through cinematography, like digital cinematography. We had like all of these waves of technology and computerization coming in for 40 years. So if everyone's going to lose their jobs to computers, how come we can't hire any staff because we just can't find good enough people at the moment because it's just so scared to find really good people? And why is unemployment so low? And also, why is it that it took 350 people to make the first Blade Runner, and when they made Blade Runner 47, that was 3,000 people, right? And so, you know, like, it's not, there's just no, I mean, there just isn't any historical basis that we are suddenly getting rid of tons of people. Now, there is a change in jobs, right? It absolutely is the case that if you were a clapper loader, you used to have a lot more work when there were a lot more films being made with film than now they are now, right? And obviously now there are DITs. There are still clapper loaders. They work on Chris Nolan's films, but they just, you know, less of them, right? But here's the thing, like, that's what society does. Forget us for a second. Like, society evolves, right? There are different jobs. Like, in my father's era, there were people that were called secretaries, and people gave over, you know, little tape recordings, and people typed up what their letters were. And, like, it's absurd to think of, like, a secretarial call today, right? But that doesn't mean that there aren't a whole lot of interesting jobs that involve different skills. They just aren't those secretaries. Now, I admit that if you are one of the people that are displaced, that's horrendous, right? Like, if I am made redundant at my organization, that is, at a possible level, without a doubt, really upsetting. But again, I would say that society just evolves and moves forward. And we have found ways to take entertainment technology and use it to make more entertainment technology. And if you don't believe me, just look at what's going on the streamers in terms of the quality of visual effects work. Was spectacularly better than what it used to be at a television level, right? And those productions are employing a lot of people. And so if you look at Foundation or whatever the show is, these are just, I mean, nothing to do with those shows, right? But they're spectacularly good visual effects. So there just is no pattern that says that. Now, what we will find is that there are new jobs involving AI, yeah, and there will be some old jobs that are no longer employing as many people. And so we do need to offer ways to transition people, as you were saying, advising Sun, so that it's not like, you know, throw out who's been there. And I can again point to the fact that, like, if you looked at what happened at ILM when digital compositing came in, and I, you know, no longer this because, you know, it's starting compositing, like, they would say to people, you've got skills, you've got a really good eye. Yeah, and like that's not a technical skill, like it's a creative, sort of cognitive skill. And so they trained really good film compositors to be digital compositors because it's the right thing to do, not because it's a moral thing to, I mean, it's moral, but it's like, it was the, you know, the sensible thing. You got somebody who's got a really good eye, a really experienced compositor. Why on earth would you want to get rid of them? And so the analogy I use, and if you'll indulge me, I'm a sailor, like my father was in the Navy, so I do everything with boats. Like, at the moment, the popular press is implying that we're throwing out the old and bringing in the new. And I'd say it's like you've got two bits of rope, right, which are the two processes. And they just want to tie them in a knot. And, like, the trouble with tying knots is people are literally having to jump through hoops to make it from one side to the other. And it doesn't move smoothly, and it catches on things, and it's not very good, and it can come undone. It's just, like, knots are not what you want, right? And then they say, well, and we'll just run it in parallel, and we'll kind of lash the two together. Like, again, lumpy solution, and only as good as the intermediary. So if you employ me to be an intermediary between, let's say, for argument's sake, you were, you know, new and you were the old techniques, then you're only as good as me in that role conversing between the two. It's a temporary hack. But if you unravel a bit of rope and unravel the other side and then splice them together, yeah, it's got some lumps, but it'll run smoothly. But to do that, what we have to do is you have to take the technology and say, look, rather than just saying, hey, this is the coolest new piece of tech, move over people, we're putting the tech in. You say, how can I make the tech maybe slightly more complicated for me, but so it fits better with your work? And then how can I take your work practices and just change them a bit so they integrate with the new tech? And that's not sexy. It's not like in pitch decks, you know, you want to go, oh, it's disruptive technology, going to change the world. Like, humans don't want that. You don't walk into a new organization and say, we're going to change everything that you know how to do and sack half in that. If you come in and say, I've got a way of integrating this in kind of with what you're doing and we can co-design it to work out how you're working, that's where you want to be. So, you know, you guys are doing that, you guys are doing that, like, it's great. And that's what I think you should be talking about.
I just to add to that, I think there's always, I'm a huge Asimov geek, and he talks about we have love and fear on a new technology. And it's always like, does the love be the fear in a sense, how much it contributes, how much it gives to us? And if you look back to history, a lot of it is like, and I think we make a mistake, like Mike was saying, we say, that's the technology and that's it, it starts there. Throughout the history, we've always invented technology to like guide it in the way we want it to go, right? For instance, if you think about it, stupid example, we invented fire, but you can't have fire indoors, so we're in the chimney, right? Or we have cars, people were dying massively when cars came out because they were not crossing the roads, get hit, right? But we didn't get rid of the car because we were like, you know, cars taking us places. So I do think we're really in infancy of this AI, and it's important we build it, and we're gonna keep adding things that we don't even know what they are yet, and we'll create new jobs that we don't know what they are just yet. Our, you know, as Mike said, our world is changing. I think we're really at the fundamental change from this industry, but I personally see it as super, super positive because this is a really hard industry to get into and there's a really, really high barrier in it. And I don't think stories should be tied to socioeconomic status. They should come from everywhere. And kids these days, they like visually based stories. So if we enable these tools for people to say, you know, I say 824 stories, grounded stories with Marvel visuals. That's what kids will watch, right? But right now it's so expensive to make those kind of things. So that's where I see technology as a means to an end. Let's have these stories come from all over the world.
Thank you, Nicola.
Jen, I was gonna say, there's one thing on that is at its simplest form and from where I came from in filmmaking. If we can tell better stories, higher quality for cheaper and faster, at Lionsgate anyway, we would have done more. So I just think, talking about jobs and talking about creation and all this stuff, I think it's just going to be more. Because people are going to be so excited that it gets to be better, and it gets to be cheaper. It's more approachable. So I think it's all good.
I'm an example for that. I'll stop. Yeah, I know we're over time.